On the Republican side, the guy who wins is the guy who stands in the middle of the circle I told you about and can look everybody and all the moving parts of the conservative movement. Now, they're also legacy voters, guys. They're Republicans who are voting Republican because, well, the guy at Little Round Top was a Republican and I'm from Maine, okay? So you do have, just as there are little old ladies in Mississippi who agree with Ronald Reagan and vote for George McGovern because Sherman was mean to Atlanta recently. And so you have legacy voters that over time that diminishes and you get new legacy voters, guys whose children are people who liked Reagan or voting Republican, okay? But the moving parts of the conservative movement, the guys who can and will walk in or out of the room, will become active, will become political activists and help move votes. Around the room, the guy who stands most comfortably right now in the middle of that room is George Allen. Now, George Allen's liability is that he looks and sounds too much like George Bush. I mean, if he had to, what's the negative? Well, he comes across like George Bush. But he's right in the middle, and that may be good enough for him. You've got the guy from Massachusetts, Governor Romney, who I had hoped that his campaign, whether he won or lost, would put anti-Mormon bigotry behind us in the same way that Kennedy's did for opposition to Roman Catholicism. I'm afraid that with Big Love and Anderson Cooper talking about that guy in Texas all the time, the polygamist, that the Mormons as cult thing is, instead of going down, gets pushed up. And there was some very interesting polling. 40 years ago, would you vote for somebody who agreed with you on most things who was otherwise black, Jewish, or Mormon? And blacks and Jews won't vote for them 30%. Mormons won't vote for them 18%. Flash forward to today. Blacks and Jews, 1 or 2% wouldn't vote for them. Mormons, 18%. So bigotry against Jews and blacks went down like this, and the Mormon one didn't move. It didn't move at all. I was hoping, still hoping, that we can get past that and that the aggressively secular left, which has helped us so much to create a more ecumenical right, that will allow us to bring the Mormons in at the same time. But that may not happen. He wants to be in the center of the room, but his problem is he's never lived in the United States. He's lived in Utah and Massachusetts. And that's the sort of thing that just gives you an odd idea of where everybody is. I mean, remember Dukakis? There was that comment by the lady who was his campaign manager.
Estridge,
who said that she was in a room and, or maybe somebody was talking about her. There was a room, 20 of his top people, and this guy saying this was the only one who didn't live inside Route 128, okay? And you have some sense of their ability to project out into to the rest of the country and get what's going on in Kansas and California is limited. I grew up in Massachusetts, I mean, in the 128 Beltway, okay? I believe New York City was the Midwest until I was in my 20s, okay? That's not a joke, I mean, I really did. I thought my dad was from way out there, and the world centered around Boston and Cambridge. And then there was everything else. So Massachusetts and Utah are a difficult place to sort of get your bearings on the country if you're running. Maybe running is Jeb Bush. I think he would be the strongest candidate. He's the best Republican governor in the country. He could jump dead center of the coalition and has a track record as a governor of tremendous success. People say, oh, you can't run another Bush. People will say dynasty, okay? Well, when you're running against Hillary Clinton, that's a harder argument for the New York Times to make. It's not impossible, but harder. And I would argue that when you talk to him, he sounds different, he acts different. The challenge on McCain is that he lost in 2000 because he was 10 paces off dead center, campaign finance reform. He was generally a Reagan Republican, except for campaign finance reform. And that was enough to upend him, because the right to life people were concerned, the gun people were concerned, the tax people were concerned. I ran two press conferences on campaign finance reform, one in New Hampshire, one in South Carolina, just before those primaries. He was running around telling people I spent $12 million to kneecap them in South Carolina, held a press conference. But it had the effect of unsettling the base and the movement. People said, he's not with us on this stuff. So his challenge is, having been 10 paces off. He's now switched his position on taxes, on guns, on judges, on Kyoto, and he's got to run as the guy who's flip-flopped on central issues. And the other challenge he has, and George Will wrote about this, he can't give the right to life people the judge they need. And they figured it out. Because his number one goal in life is to chisel off Keating 5 from his tombstone and spray paint on campaign finance reform. So he has to have a Supreme Court that'll maintain campaign finance reform. There are no judges in America who look at the Constitution and say, it is flexible enough for campaign finance reform, but not flexible enough for Roe v. Wade. Okay? Judges will either say campaign finance reform is unconstitutional and Roe v. Wade is bad law, or campaign finance reform is okay and Roe v. Wade is okay too. So he's got a number of challenges on that one. What's interesting is his numbers have not fallen with immigration, which pleases me because it's like the one issue he's good on, and trade. He's good on trade. And my friends who say, oh, immigration's a big issue, everyone will hate people who are pro-immigrant, I don't see John McCain's numbers falling as a result of his position on immigration. And then the counter-argument is, wait till they get him in New Hampshire and start talking about it. And that may be true. But you'd think if it was as powerful an issue as they thought it was, and he was the number one proponent of amnesty, that you'd see numbers, unless all they're measuring is name ID, and that's sometimes what the political pollsters tell you. Watch Rick Perry, Texas, second best governor in the country. He cut spending $10 billion after Bush left because somebody had been spending too much money in Texas prior to Rick Perry taking over. And he could go, hey, I've done this before, guys. Otherwise, Brownback wants to run as the guy who wants to run as a social conservative out, as opposed to the way he views everybody else running as an economic conservative who says, hey, you guys go to church, why don't you come, you pay taxes too.